Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to episode number 6 of the Everything Coworking Podcast. Our guest today is Patrick Poehler. Patrick quit his full-time job to start his own web and mobile app development company. He is a member at the Salt Mines Coworking Space in Columbus, Ohio, and says he probably would have gone back to his full-time job without the support of his coworkers at the Salt Mines. Enjoy Patrick's story. We share lots of resources in this episode in the show notes at www.everythingcoworking.com/6. Patrick, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to talk about your story and learn more about you.
Thanks, Jamie.
So you are in Columbus, Ohio, working out of the Salt Mines. That's the extent of my intro. I would love to have you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, something personal to help us get to know you a little bit better.
Sure. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. I've been living in Columbus for about 14 years, but Louisville is where I grew up and, you know, kind of started. My background, I didn't really come from a heavy tech background. My dad was blue collar. My stepdad rather was blue collar. My mom was a chemical dependency counselor, a nurse, in nursing. And I think just from the beginning, though, my first computer was an Acer 286. My stepdad, it was kind of genius in a way because he sort of realized computers were going to be an important thing. And he didn't graduate college. He didn't even really graduate high school. But he was pretty smart and could kind of see ahead where things were going. So he bought I got my first family computer. We got our first computer when I was like 13. Or not even that. I think it was actually maybe I was closer to 10. I had just started middle school.
Wow.
And I was one of the few kids who had one. And we weren't rich by any stretch of the imagination. He probably went into a significant amount of debt getting it.
You know what? It's funny. I grew up on a farm in upstate New York. I looked up the population of my hometown the other day. It's 1,000. Like, we didn't have a stoplight. And so my dad was a farmer, and my mom worked at the school. And it's funny, they were really early adopters of the home computer. And It's kind of like your situation. Like, for some reason, they just got that it was important. And yeah, not a lot of extra money, but it was one of those things they prioritized. And I can't remember what it was. And I remember like the floppy disks and the, I'll have to ask them what model it was. But still to this day, I'm sort of surprised. And my dad, being a farmer, like just never used, he didn't need to use technology in his job. But one of the first things he did was he would get into the chat forums and talk to people around the country about like crops and, animal. Yeah. So it's just kind of an interesting, but anyway, not to cut you off.
That's great. I mean, we got online early too. I think we had one of the first, like, when modems were still in bauds, we
exactly.
had a baud, maybe 9600 baud modem, Prodigy. It was funny. We stayed up kind of late when we first got online, and there was this Mad Libs group in Prodigy, and basically you could just play Mad Libs all night.
That's hilarious.
And as a family, we were just cracking up. It's like one of my fondest memories, actually, of my family just sitting around and cracking up. But I was very a nerdy kid growing up. And I kind of thought I would either be a microbiologist or, I was really into science, hard science. And then I think I read something about the career of a biologist or my microbiologist or anyone in like a hard science field. And it was a lot of boring, repetitive work.
Yep.
And you have to spend so much time to, in a very low position before you even really have can lead, a research team and do. And I've always been a little, I kind of know a lot about myself, and I realized that was not that's not what I wanted to do. But yeah, computers kind of hooked me early on. I think I didn't necessarily want to be a programmer. I always wanted to do something with art and design and graphics. I saw Jurassic Park in 93, and that just blew my mind. And I read everything I could about how they, you know, created the dinosaurs, how they used computer graphics. And that kind of really hooked me as, oh, okay, I can use this tool for more than just Mad Libs, you know, right. Or as a punishment, you know, as a, you know, daily 30, half an hour chore to learn typing, you know?
Yeah.
So that kind of got the wheels turning. And I went to college under a computer science degree because I couldn't get into art school. I'm not that great of an artist.
Your talent but I didn't figured, quite follow your passion in that avenue.
No, my skills didn't. I guess I didn't really try that hard in art. I mean, I probably should have tried harder developing a portfolio, but it turned out I actually got really into solving puzzles. And when I started taking computer science classes, I realized I really enjoyed it because it is just all puzzle solving.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of where it hooked me. You know, I was not one of these whiz kids who at 13 were programming, you know, a bulletin board system. I was very, I felt like I was a little late to the game, I think, from all the, you know, stories you hear, which mm-hmm. are completely ridiculous now that I'm older.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it didn't really turn into a job for me until I started working at an aviation company, an aviation startup in Louisville called Global Air, and they still exist. I called them the Yahoo of aviation because portals were a really big thing at the time, and they wanted to be this one-stop destination for all things related to aviation.
Okay.
So aircraft sales, classifieds, forums, chat. I was the all around computer guy. It started with just my boss had hired me on to help, you know, just load up some basic HTML, you know, onto the site. And then gradually over time, I started fixing the computers. I started, we moved the servers in house.
Life at a startup.
Yeah. I jumped into a lot of different things early. And that kind of solidified where I wanted to go. I loved aviation. So I then started getting my private pilot's license.
Okay.
Because of that job. And kind of flew for most of my 20s, you know, privately as a hobby. But I also realized that I didn't want to spend all of my time fixing and maintaining computers and servers. Like, you know, I really enjoyed my work more when I was developing applications, adding new features for the site. And it was fulfilling. And I could also see an update that I pushed live instantaneously. And so my passion for the web really, really started there. And it was at a time, I think, where I certainly kind of didn't feel to me like it was real programming, even though I was talking to a server. And
mm-hmm.
I always had this concept of, like, my work would be sitting on a shelf at CompUSA or some computer
store.
So the web was a different
concept
for me. But more and more people started, you know, I think, appreciating it over time. So, that's kind of what happened. I mean, I left that job and moved up here to Columbus, worked for a few companies, Chase Auto Finance, worked for a international virus, company called Sophos, did that for about 8 years in C#.net. You know, I was strictly Microsoft.
Okay. Yeah.
Then I don't know. I had been taking like part-time freelancing gigs on the side, you know, just trying different things with friends. And then just realized like I was a lot happier doing freelancing work for clients. And so I made a definite, promise to myself to save up some money and actually make a real serious go at it. And then that's kind of what happened. I started freelancing a little bit sooner than I expected when my company laid me off.
So there you go.
And my
two sort of accidents that led you into entrepreneurship.
Some side gigs
that were kind of fun, and then bam.
Well, it was a shock before because I've never been fired. Up until that point, I had not been fired. I hadn't been laid off. I always held a job. I was very much. My family came from a lower. Well, it wasn't even so much that. It's just my family came from a lower middle class. I mean, I came from a lower middle class background, and we having a job, you know, was a big thing for
me. Totally. Yep.
You know, and it was something I always wanted that stability. And that's funny to say now that I'm in a field where there's very little stability. But yeah, the next day I was just in bed in shock, and my wife, we had just started dating at the time, you know, said, "Well, why are you talking about looking for a job? You wanted to try going out on your own and freelancing. Now you are saving up for this. You have saved up for it. Like, now's the time. Maybe you should do it." So then I was like, "You're right. And you're also crazy, because who would?"
Right.
I was like, "You want to marry me someday, right?" Well, but she's a realtor, so she understood working for oneself and like how big of a deal that was and how great it is actually. So yeah, then I didn't look back. I mean, that it's been 4 years. I think this is the longest job I've ever held. Which says something about me. And, you know, went from Microsoft and corporate development to freelancing and learning how to deal with clients, which has been a really interesting challenge. So
I'm sure we can talk
very
for
long
about
answer.
It's good.
It's going to be a nightmare to edit, I'm sure.
So no, it's all good. Tell me about the day when you decided to be a freelancer. What were the next steps that you took? What did you do when you got out of bed, sort of full of encouragement from your new girlfriend?
Well,
go make it happen.
Yeah, I then started reading. I already had a client at the time that I'd been working part time with. I had what I considered maybe a 6 month to a 9 month runway. I had previously paid off my car. Well, I was ahead on my car payments 6 months in advance. The idea thinking that, well, if I ever, you know, since I'm in the Midwest, if I have to go look for a job, I'm going to need that car. So a 6 month buffer of not having to make a car payment before they repossess the car made a lot of sense to me. And I had like a 9 month window of like, well, I think I can, with all my expenses and stuff, I can subsist on this nine months of savings. And then I had a really good part-time client. And then I started, I immediately let them know that I was fully available. So I arranged a meeting to meet with them, you know, ASAP, so we could start working on some of the projects I knew they wanted to, you know, move forward on. And then my next step was really just reading. I wanted to go into mobile development, I thought. And so I started studying Objective-C and iOS. And I think what happened next was pretty interesting, because that's not where I ended up. I didn't become an iOS developer, because my client that I was working with as a freelancer, I had been working as a freelancer part-time, suddenly dumped a lot of work on me, which was good and bad.
Yep.
It was bad in that I was still pricing myself at a part-time rate.
Ooh.
Yeah. And also I hadn't learned yet how to manage a client properly and set proper expectations. Also during that time, they were purchased by a much larger company. So suddenly I went from interacting with one person at this organization to interacting with five people, all of which didn't really kind of understand what I was doing. And not that I was doing a very good job of explaining what my role was. You know, I think now I would have handled that situation a lot more differently. But at the time, I just rolled with it.
Yeah.
You know, I tried to please everybody. I tried to, you know, not rock the boat. And that, I think I wasted a lot of time in that. And not for nothing. I mean, I was able to make some money, but it ate into my savings a lot more. And I think that 9 months probably would have been better spent building up a real, you know, foundation. I look back and I wonder, well, I was still trying to lean as a generalist. And I think it's a very interesting thing when you're a freelancer. How do you, if you're a really good web developer, that's not enough to market yourself. You can't just say, I'm a really good web developer. I can build whatever you want, because clients don't. No one knows that. They're like, no, I want an iOS developer. I want an Android developer. I want an expression engine developer or whatever. Like, you know, how do I Google for me what I want? So I guess, you know, that was a really big struggle, was sort of working through that.
How did you learn to manage, you know, how did you start to get better at the client management and determining what the right focus was for you?
Almost quitting. I mean, it literally took a crisis. Like I think I had a panic attack, actually. I'm not quite sure.
Probably.
But I had been sharing a space with a couple of designers, and it just sort of reached a breaking point where, you know, I had to take a walk.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I took a walk. I took a really long walk downtown Columbus. And just when I came back, like, I think in that walk, I knew intellectually all the things I needed to do. I needed to increase my rate.
Yep.
I needed to establish some kind of fixed hourly, because they were, every little small task was had to go through like a purchase order. And I was like, this is so inefficient. I'm trying to justify every little hour that I'm spending. I'm spending more time doing than actually fixing their problem. And I feel like they didn't trust me. You know, I lost that trusted relationship that I had when I was just dealing with
one person. Yeah.
Person. So when I came back, I fired off an email. It took me about a day to really compose it and reset the terms. And I'd like to say that worked and that fixed everything with that client, but it didn't. I had to actually fire them, you know, two or three months later. But then that was bad enough for me to start to look at, okay, I just can't approach situations like I'm a developer. I've got to approach it like a business person, like we're setting up a relationship. And that's a two-way street. There's boundaries. I started to learn like what a professional actually was, I think, from that experience. And then it was just application. It was just sort of applying that rigorously with every new client engagement, which fortunately I was able to actually start focusing on because I didn't have crisis after crisis I had to manage. And a pair of designers, Dennis and Julie Field, that I've been working with, they brought up Expression Engine as a tool they had been using. I started working with them, just doing back-end development, more sophisticated development that they couldn't handle on their own, using this tool, and then started getting leads because I was on Twitter just touting my, you know, again, very specific skill set.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I started getting leads, you know, just better leads. Things were more self-sustaining. I was starting to get referrals. And then things just kind of worked out for the best there.
You know, I appreciate you sharing that story because it's like I can feel your pain while you're telling the story.
Yes.
And I can sort of envision you, like, you know, either at home by yourself, like just, you know, with this client that's so painful and thinking, you know, you're glad that you have some sort of income, but is this really better than, you know, working for someone and, you know, and I think so many people go through that process. I have a friend who, he told me this very similar story. And I was, he was starting to go out on his own, and I would check in with him once in a while, and he's kind of miserable for a while. And then at some point he like turned this corner, and I was like, what happened? And he's like, I just figured out how to manage the client process. And he's like, I figured out who are not good clients for me and who are good clients for me. And that is the world of difference. He's like, I am like back in control. And it was life changing for him. But, you know, I hate the idea that everybody has to learn this on their own. So hearing stories from other people, maybe before someone goes out on this journey of their own, maybe it'll help them recognize when it's happening.
Yeah, I think those stories can help, especially that recognizing part, because when you're in it, you don't realize how deep you're in it until someone like looks at you and says, are you okay?
Yeah,
like,
where you have that moment where you have to go for a walk, and it's so... Right. It feels like such a crisis that there's something in your mind that just switches and says, you know, this can't go on anymore. But that's a painful point to get to.
Yeah. And looking back, I realized that none of these things were really emergencies. But there was maybe
like
one or two.
To you, though, I mean, that's the thing. You're in this mindset. You had to have a mindset shift about what the situation was. And that's, yeah, it's hard to do, especially when you're working alone, which is why I love the concept of co-working, which we'll talk about later.
It really helped. I think I owe my friends a lot for actually, you know, working out of that space, you know, and just having someone I could go in to talk to.
Yeah.
Like that helped get me through this really difficult time. And then I left that space to get married and to sort of work from home for while we were making those wedding preparations. Also it saved money too. But I think if I had been working at home throughout that entire time,
yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I would have actually gone back, to a full-time job. Because that at the time, yeah, that was more preferable than, I don't know, being locked in this own prison of my own,
totally.
My own design.
Yep. Yeah. No, that's a really great insight. Okay. So let's talk about, that was a really, really great story of kind of your struggle to get on the path that you're on now. So tell us where you are today and share one of your biggest success stories.
Sure. We're still kind of a small agency. We're growing. It's me and a really talented developer that works for me part-time. His name is Andrew Clinton. He's great. And we also pull in other freelancers and contractors, you know, as necessary. I think we're in this interesting stage where it's big enough that we're bigger than any one particular freelancer, but not quite to that level of where we're ready yet to have, you know, full-time, you know, constant employees. So I'm focused on trying to grow that as much as possible and to get enough consistent work in to where we can actually start doing some really interesting things that you can get with a full-time employee. Like, I feel like if you're working with contractors, it's great because if you pick the right professionals, it's an easy relationship to manage. But at the same time, they're only working on those projects. They're not investing tools back into the business.
Yeah. And thinking bigger picture about your future and
Sure. Sure. I've launched a couple of products. So we work on Expression Engine pretty frequently. So I have a commercial add-on.
You have to tell me, I don't know what Expression Engine is.
Expression Engine is a CMS, very similar to Joomla or WordPress. The great thing about Expression Engine is that it does not output any HTML or CSS for you. It mainly just tries to, you create buckets and then you use, what are called tags or template tags to wrap your HTML around that information. So it's really great for designers and front-end developers because they can kind of control exactly how their HTML or CSS operates. It's a tool for professionals, I think. It is a commercial product. You have to incorporate the cost into your quotes to your clients. But I think it helps manage the development of the project much more efficiently. And there's actually support. So, you know, from one company. So if there's any bugs or issues, Ellis Lab is really good at resolving those issues. And there's a really strong community of freelancers who use it. And we all talk and we all, you know, share leads and send referrals to each other. So it's a fantastic group of people. But yeah, as a commercial add-on developer, a year ago, well, maybe 2 years ago, I had in the back of my mind, I love making products. I love the idea of making something once, and then you go through that big process of making it, and then you can just resell it, you know, and make improvements and do this.
Passive income.
Yeah, and it's a skill, though, to not, as a developer, I realized how much I underappreciated marketing and positioning a product. Because you can have a great piece of software. I've created a lot of what I thought were really great things that just didn't take off. So with PDF Press, I knew I had a need of for a project of converting HTML documents to PDF and using that very efficiently in Expression Engine. I did a market comparison, found there were a few add-ons that kind of did that, but none really, I felt like I could do it better and actually charge a premium for it. And so just over, I think the course of 2 or 3 months, I went through that process, developed the add-on, got a list of beta users, about 60 beta users, which is pretty huge, I think, considering the community is pretty small. Charged it, and lo and behold, people actually paid money for it.
Nice!
Yeah.
A winner!
I'm not rolling in it. This is not, I call it my steak dinner money. It's enough to, like, afford a really nice steakhouse night with my wife every month. But it's taught me a lot about writing copy. It's taught me a lot about connecting to an audience. And I really think and if you want to talk about our biggest success, I think this year we've accumulated, we were running 5 projects at once successfully. Me, I was running 2 contractors, and then Andrew, our part-time developer, and we were just operating all cylinders firing. We launched a really large application for an agency. We did a small app for a startup called Death the Stock Photo. Great guys. And then we were also maintaining very effectively our existing clients on long-term relationships. And I think that going through that process, I was like, wow, the tools are working. The process is working. I'm working hard, but I'm not stressed.
Yeah.
I'm handling 5 clients, 5 great clients instead of 1 really demanding client.
Yeah.
And it just felt like, from a success standpoint, I felt like, yes, this is working. And this is what, you know, we kind of do. We develop products for other agencies, for small businesses and startups. And the vision was coming together. We had an awesome 2 quarters.
Yeah, no, both great stories. It's funny. I always feel like entrepreneurs have a hard time focusing on success stories and they're always looking forward. But I think it's good because, I mean, so you sort of described your 2 successes as, you know, 1, not a major monetary success yet, but a process that you're figuring out. It's something, you know, that you want to do more of and you feel like you've made, you know, a major leap forward in understanding the process of developing a product and positioning it and marketing it. And so you'll do it again and, you know, it'll be your vacation fund or something, you know, bigger and, you know, you'll go from there. And then getting into the flow of having the right process to manage 5 clients and, you know, no one has a panic attack and what that means for the future. You know, it's like, we're always looking ahead to what's next. So I think it's great to celebrate those, those things yeah. and also be excited about what that means for the future.
Yeah, I look at it as a foundation. I mean, what I'm learning with PDF is helping me with my big product, which is RexRabbit, which handles it's a real estate listing API. So this is another problem space I'm trying to work on. Different real estate boards, there's no common API. There's no common way for a freelancer or contractor to create an IDX website for a real estate client without using an iframe,
okay,
HTML, like ugly hack. It's just a terrible situation. And I've had enough clients that we've been working in real estate for, and we've solved this problem for those clients. And now with RexRabbit, we're taking it out. We want to be the Stripe and Twilio, you know, these big API solutions for developers. And it's worked out pretty well, I think. So, but I don't think I could have made, I don't think I would have tackled that problem. And I don't think I would have known how to market it. I still think I'm still learning a big time.
Of course.
It feels different. It feels different than before, where I would just build something and say, hey, here it is.
Yep.
And no one signed up for it. So
it's amazing when you start. I think maybe that is one of the things that hold people back from, there are a lot of things that hold people back from going out on their own, but sort of that inkling in the back of your mind that you have to know how to do a lot of things business wise, marketing, sales, accounting, other than just what you want to do, which is, you know, development.
Yeah. I just try it. I mean, there's failure isn't as scary as
it's amazing. Once you've done it a couple times, it's not that scary anymore. Yeah.
It's almost scary to succeed. It's like, oh, now what?
Right.
I know what failure feels like at this stage. I don't know what success feels like at this stage.
That's funny. Well, I'll hope that's a good, good feeling. So tell me about two resources that have helped you along in your journey.
You know, I would say I listen to podcasts quite a bit, just hearing stories from other bootstrappers, you know, people who are not taking seed funding, who are building stuff on their own. So one podcast is I really listen to quite a bit is bootstrapped.fm.
Yep.
They also have a really good discussion forum. It's kind of like going back to the old business of software forums, which Joel Spolsky, you know, created now before he's ruling everything that is Stack Overflow and Stack Exchange. So podcasts are a big thing. Blogs, I've always read a lot of blogs. When I was starting out and dreaming of being a freelancer, I would read Coding Horror, you know, Joel on Software, Eric Sink, you know, all of, I had a huge like Google Reader feed, and I'm sure plenty of my bosses were going like, he's just reading articles.
Yeah.
So what's he doing? And then I think Twitter is a huge, is really an interesting, resource. I follow the EECMS hashtag quite a bit, which is where all of the Expression Engine folks post things. And I've gotten some really good conversations, going in. Whenever we meet up for a conference, it's like a meetup of that Twitter hashtag.
Yep, right, so, right.
Yeah, I think that's three resources, but, you know, I think those are the ones I kind of rely on now for help.
Yeah, well, three good ones. And I always hear people talk about, you know, having mentors and coaches and whatnot, but these things can serve as those, you know, for those people who haven't found the right mentors or just don't have access to them all the time, which is generally the problem with mentors, right? Is podcasts and your Twitter community and blogs, you can just learn so much and connect with other people going through the same challenges. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'd like to have a mentor relationship or, you know, because I hear so much how that's important, but I think it has to be organic.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's almost like, I think if the perfect mentor is almost someone who is not quite working as much and has the time they can
to invest. Yeah.
Kind of devote to you. And that's a lot to ask of someone.
It is. It's hard to find and a lot to ask.
Yeah. So it's, I haven't found that yet. But I just try to be helpful and get help from my peers. And so far that's been working out pretty well.
Which leads to my next question. So tell me about the Salt Mines.
Yes.
Where you are a member, a co-working space in Columbus, Ohio, and how you joined and yeah, what you get out of being a member there?
I get so much. I think the Salt Mines is the perfect co-working space for me. It's this mix of non-cubicle. So someone described this to me the other day of like why co-working spaces are great. And why the Salt Mines I think is great is that you can have that experience of having coworkers and friends, you know, people you talk the breeze about, people you bounce ideas off of, but then you don't have to rely on them for your project. Like you're not frustrated by them because they're not, you know, maybe not coding something right or not giving you what you need, you know, or.
Totally. It's brilliant. There's like no strings attached. There's no politics. There's nothing. Yes. It's totally, it is. I was talking to someone about that very same thing yesterday, how amazing it is to have coworkers in quotes that are not right people you rely on or have to worry about what they might say to somebody else when you're done with your conversation. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They have no agenda. Yep. I mean, they have their own agenda and they don't really care about your agenda and you don't care about theirs. And it's great.
And if there's value to be exchanged, you do it. If not, then that's cool too.
So the Salt Mines, I met Andy, I think when he had the original space and it was really the size of a very small, maybe sidewalk coffee shop. And he laid it out beautifully. It was, I mean, he's got a real taste for, designing a space that feels authentic. It feels like a place you want to work at, even if it is kind of a smaller environment. So I worked there for a couple of days, liked it. I didn't really love it though, because I need a desk. I need like a more permanent situation to work. If I'm going to pay for a co-working desk, a lot of people are different, but that's kind of, I knew that was my preference. So he found a larger space, invited a lot of the people that he kind of knew we're on the fence, you know, and actually got our input of, you know, showed us the space when it was still rough, when he was still deciding whether or not to purchase it, and let us actually shape it. And I really appreciated that. And now he's opening a second location, you know, not too far from the first. And again, he did the same thing. You know, he showed it to everyone who was on the fence. He showed it to us current members. And he was like, I want you guys to feel like this is your space too, even though you're at the other location. In fact, he was like, I want you guys to come to this location and go back and forth, you know, as much as possible. And, you know, I think the Salt Mines, out of all of the, we have a few co-working spaces in Columbus, but they feel more like, well, I can't say all of them, but the ones that I've toured at least, felt very much like, you know, rent an office. And I was like, that's not what co-working is. It's not, you're not renting an office. Anyone can just rent an office or get one of these shared executive suites. But co-working is different. Co-working is about sort of belonging there, you know, and forming those relationships. It wasn't what I expected out of a co-working space. That just kind of happened. And I realized, oh, I enjoy coming here every single day. So yeah, that's
the Salt Mines. Awesome. And we will, we'll link to the Salt Mines and provide their, address and URL in the show notes if anybody wants to check them out and their Twitter handle and Facebook and all that good stuff. So you mentioned, so related to being part of a co-working space, and you mentioned part of the value was building relationships with the community. What are other ways that you, and you mentioned this a little bit before, but I just want to kind of come back to it, how you find your tribe, because I think that's one of the keys to hanging in there on the tough days when you're a freelancer.
Yeah, finding the tribe was hard. When I started off, I didn't attend any meetups. All of my peers were coworkers. So getting out there and becoming known was a challenge. It started, I think, with the startup events in Columbus. Columbus has two startup weekends.
Okay.
We have a monthly thing called Wake Up Startup. I really enjoy startups. I enjoy talking with really passionate founders. And also, there's a business side to that too, in that, you know, a lot of founders don't have technical experience and, you know, they may actually have a budget to actually build their product. And I just started attending those and, you know, found other entrepreneurs and started actually collecting this amazing group of friends and colleagues. And then the Tribe Online, you know, if I could recommend to any freelancers, find a good Twitter hashtag around your product or your, you know, maybe your solution. If you're a developer, find it around a particular tool, but find some online community that you can go to that is not full of negative people and follow them online, interact with them online, and then go to a conference where you know there are going to be a lot of those people there. And what I did, actually, I attended a conference for Expression Engine, and then I also submitted a talk at it. And I actually, my first conference and my first time actually speaking at a conference.
Nice.
It was crazy. And what happened was I'm kind of an introvert, and people came up to me, though, because they knew I was speaking at a conference. They were interested in the topic, and that was a really good icebreaker. And I've kept those friendships from that conference since then. And, you know, that accelerated,
yeah,
I guess, the Tribe growth. So yeah, you know, speak about something, just submit a talk. It's kind of scary, but it's not as scary as you think. When it's over with, you're still alive. You're still there. Like,
again, one of those fear things, just rip the Band-Aid off and do it. And it's not so bad. And also just worth the investment. I mean, same thing with going to conferences. If you can find the right one, mm-hmm, where your people are going to be, then there's a huge return on that over time.
Yeah. And there's probably there's a lot of smaller 1-day conferences,
yep,
too. And Columbus is really great in that we're drivable to a lot of different places. So even a 1-day conference, if you can't afford the ticket or hotel room, like, just going for a day can help. And reach out to a few of those people maybe you're following online beforehand and say, hey, I'm coming. I read your blog post about blah. I thought it was good. I'd love to get coffee with you if you had a chance, or, you know, I'm looking forward to meeting you if I can find you.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Get those relationships set up a little bit beforehand. So you talked about some of the tough days. How do you stay balanced?
I work regular hours. I, you know, in fact, actually probably less than regular hours, really. I mean, I usually start work around 10, and maybe go until about 5 or 6. And my wife gets on me a lot because she's a realtor and she works evenings. She works whenever her clients,
yep,
are busy.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to work on a very set schedule,
mm-hmm,
and very rarely do I burn the midnight oil unless it's something really important. I take walks in the morning. You know, I ride my bike into work when I can, when it's not too hot or people. I'm very finicky about that. And I don't try to sweat the small stuff. I think I've learned through this that most things are not as serious as they seem if you just give it maybe a half an hour. Like, if you can walk away from something for about half an hour and come back to it, you usually are going to approach that with a little bit more objectivity. And trying to give someone else that you may have a very serious disagreement with the benefit of the doubt that they're just as stressed out, or, you know, you don't know what's going on the other end of that inbox, you know, on the other end of the conversation,
yeah,
always too. So that's kind of how I manage it. I feel like if I'm not having fun doing this, then I might as well just go back to a full-time job.
Yeah. And if you're working, it's fun. It's funny. I feel like that sort of 24/7, if you're an entrepreneur, you have to be, you know, working at every possible moment is such,
yeah,
a,
that's ridiculous.
It's a mindset but it's tough to battle sometimes because I feel like it's fairly pervasive.
Yeah, that's why I stopped listening to these typical startup podcast because they were just full of guys like, you got to crush it. You got to, and I was like, no, you really, I mean, yeah, you got to work hard, but
there's working smart too. I mean, I'm just, I mean, that's partly why I asked that question, because I'm such a believer that you have to have some balance in order to do your best thinking. And I mean, there's research that shows you need to have sleep. You need to eat well in order to do your best work. And also, to your point, what's the point? You know, if in 20 years, all you did was work, and even if you love your work. So, but it's hard. So I like to, I love to ask that question and try to surround myself with people who have that philosophy so that it keeps me sort of centered on my approach.
And let's be honest, just because you're in front of a computer doesn't mean you're working. Like,
Totally.
So I track my time using Rescue Time. I try to track my productive hours versus my non-productive. Yeah. And I feel pretty good if I can get four productive, very productive hours in, maybe a couple hours where I'm doing emails and stuff like that. And then I also feel it's okay to have like an hour of goof off time. You know, you're surfing Reddit, you're not, or, you know, you're on Twitter just, you know, goofing off, or, I like to read Cracked with their scientific, I don't know, their interesting little pop culture tidbits. And again, it's like, don't be afraid to try stuff. Try to go easy on yourself. Don't blame yourself so much for things, and don't compare yourself to other people. Ooh, and
that's
how they're
a good
doing.
One.
Just live your life. If you feel happy, like most of the time, you're doing better than like 95%.
Huge. I'm going to go 99%.
Yeah.
Great. Awesome tip. So you mentioned you're really active on Twitter. Where can we find you online?
Yeah, pretty easy. It's Pat Poehler. PatPoehler. I don't have a separate Twitter account for NECA. I'm just doing everything through my personal. I also post on Medium. It's medium.com/PatPoehler. And those are two of the best ways to find me.
And your website is www.aneka.com.
Yes.
Awesome.
And you'll see some pictures of the salt mines on there.
Oh, good.
We use the salt mines as a backdrop for our photos. So see our green deer head.
Nice. We'll check that out. And I know you have your products on there. So if people are curious about some of the stories you told in your product, they can check that out there as well.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And not just your time, but for being willing to share your story and your journey. It's really helpful to people. So we appreciate it.
It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And I can't wait for hearing some other episodes.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.